Blog Talk Radio.
And now, please welcome the president of Kulibushikai Karate Association International, 8-degree black belt, instructor, United States Marine Corps veteran, and one of the first-generation black belts of Grand Master Ferdinand T. Bigard, the founding father of the Kulibushikai Karate Dukenpo martial arts system, Hal T. Haywood.
Push! Welcome to the Kulibushikai Karate Association. I want to first start by welcoming our family and fans of KBK, new and old, to practicing and aspiring martial artists of all systems, styles, and cultures. I want to especially acknowledge and extend a warm welcome to Mrs. June Bigard and Brittany Bigard Brown, the beloved wife and daughter of our late great teacher, Grandmaster Ferdinand T. Bigard Jr., the founding master of the Kulibushikai Karate Dukenpo martial arts system, which we practice, teach, and continue to build. Martial arts, although originally conceived to condition the mind and body of warriors for the defense of honor, it has evolved and blossomed over the centuries into a powerful tool to unify and motivate, to forge lifelong friendship, and create opportunities from some of the most challenging circumstances imaginable. Grandmaster Bigard understood the power of martial arts to liberate students, to attain the seemingly impossible, and to achieve what our surroundings might suggest is out of reach. We are thankful for God's grace in allowing us all to unite as warriors against ignorance, hopelessness, division, and fear. I believe all share in the belief that the future is bright for us in KBK and the martial arts world. Our children and our world, we are strong of mind and body, able to listen and learn from all those who have something to share and are unselfishly willing to give and sacrifice ourselves and our skills for the betterment of others. None of us can or have succeeded alone. So we welcome all thoughts and contributions of all of you caring and dedicated friends who share the KBK vision, regardless of fighting style or martial arts system. Push!
Here again, and we want to welcome all of you who have called in and who have logged into the show this week. We've been talking over the last couple of weeks, and my name's Dudley Craig. I didn't mention that. I'm nowhere in the introduction, but I'll get there. And I'll be moderating our show today. We'll be talking to some guests and some of our KBK senior KBK members. Masters and grandmasters, and we've been talking over the last several weeks about martial arts in the education, in mainstream education. Some of the things that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks have included some of the pros and cons from the educator's point of view, from the parent's point of view, and some of the experiences that many of us as martial arts instructors and practitioners have run into. We would like to just kind of do a little roll call, see who's on the line with us so far.
All right, you have Grandmaster Hal Haywood.
Mr. President, thanks a lot for chiming in and thank you for being with us as well. Continuing a discussion that has gotten a lot of traction. Who else do we have online with us today?
Well, in the background, you know, and way in the background, you have Bishop Haywood, and that's why I'm going to remain sitting in the studio,
home, right?
Punching. That's just sitting in the studio, punching buttons, unless I need to say something, I will. Usually, it's very hard for me not to say anything because the dialogue is so, you know, compelling. It's hard not to. But you know, since you're taking roll call, I'm right here.
Well, he said, I want all our listeners to know, he said in the background, we're talking about the backbone. He's actually keeping the technical end of this going and doing a fantastic job over the last several weeks since we started the broadcast. So who else do we have online today?
You have Aster Harrison, Korobushi Kai, Martial Arts Aster Harrison. I'm online. I'll be listening in. Technically, I'm at work, but I'm tuning in. I'll be listening in to you guys and your comments and all.
Well, it's wonderful that you're here with us today, and thanks again to all of our listeners who this program is really all about. As I mentioned, we've been talking about martial arts and mainstream education, and we've had some really, really exciting, very robust dialogue and some great comments and thoughts and questions over the last couple of weeks. I invite you all to go on to the Kurobushi Kai Karate Association International website at kbkkia.com, and you can look up, you can log in and listen to some of the past broadcasts because they are available online, and you can listen to some of those dialogues. As this show, although we're live on the second, the first and fourth Sunday, can you make sure that I said that clearly? On the first and the second and fourth Sunday of the month, we are live, but we do replay the broadcast so that you have a chance to go online and you can listen to the shows and listen to all the great comments and thoughts that have gone by. For those of you who need this as a reference to dial into the show, if you want to make comments and questions, you might be listening online, but you can dial in at 347-989-1016. That's 347-989-1016, and that'll get you into the live broadcast where we are right now. Again, so back to the subject. We've been talking about what it takes to in many cases introduce the idea of martial arts as part of in the mainstream curricular setting. But this week we're gonna again go to another facet of it, and we want to talk about the legal aspects, some of the legitimate concerns that educators and administrators may have about their liability, about legal issues surrounding bringing martial arts into a school setting. And we'd like to we're gonna talk about that. We want you to call in with your comments and your questions on that. And we're gonna have some guests today that are gonna shed some light on their experiences and their thoughts in that regard. So what we're gonna do, we're gonna go to a short break, and then we're gonna go to the lines, and we're gonna bring in some thought on this, pose a couple of questions, and get this dialogue started. And we'll go after this little break.
We may not be able to predict how long we'll be around, but we can have a positive impact on the quality of those years. Healthy choices mean a lifestyle in which we make a conscious decision to eat the purest, most nutrition-rich foods available. It means avoiding smoking, excessive alcohol consumption, and not using unprescribed or unneeded drugs. And one of the healthiest habits that we can develop and maintain is regularly scheduled exercise, tailored to our own abilities and goals. Because the body should be moving, staying flexible and staying strong. Your heart, lungs, limbs, and brain will be very grateful. And you know what? So will your loved ones. Because fitness is for life.
I'm sitting here listening, and it's like, combined, what, y'all have a couple hundred worth of knowledge, a couple hundred years worth of knowledge between you? It would be great. Like, I mean, if things can keep going where they're going, I mean, keep passing those nuggets out. I mean, I have personal experience from training with some of you guys and having y'all as mentors, along with my own instructor, Bud Harrison, or Master Harrison. So, I mean, I just want to say thank you and hello to all my brothers and sisters. Ush, y'all stay strong.
Ush. So we are back in. And as I said, this week we're going to be talking about some of the legal considerations that program directors, administrators and educators may have in considering whether or not to bring a martial arts-based program into the mainstream school system. And I could say especially with public schools, but that might not be quite accurate because I think every school has a mandate to make sure that their students have a wholesome and a safe program, have wholesome and safe programs in their schools. So I'm going to ask if any of our guests who are on right now, part of our panel, have you had any questions or thoughts posed to you about or concerns voiced to you about legal problems or legal issues surrounding having martial arts in schools, in academic schools? Mr. President?
Well, I just recently had a conversation with some martial artists yesterday. They get together once a month from different styles, and they all come together and work out. And I told them what the topic would be this week on the radio station. And they had some pretty interesting conversation. But the main one was the liability, insurance, and what if somebody, what if one of the kids get hurt? That was one thing. The other one was what type of instructors would they have? Would you have qualified instructors or are you going to do backgrounds on the instructors? And, you know, they had all kind of different legal aspects when it comes down to that.
It was a pretty interesting conversation. But the main one was the liability.
Right.
What if somebody wants one
here,
echo. That was one thing. The other one, what type of instructors do they have? They have qualified instructors.
Sure.
Background on it. You know, they had all kind of...
I think you're absolutely right. I hear some of the same things, and I think that when you start interacting with public entities or any organization or group that has accountability to the broader community, that those questions are always going to come up. But someone else was trying to chime in just a minute ago. Who was that? Okay, I think someone's on the line, and I'm hearing a little background noise in their phone. but maybe they can mute out if they're just listening in, because we have many people just calling and listening in, and we welcome you to call in and listen in. Just be mindful that if you're not addressing
Master Craig, Master Dudley,
yeah, go ahead.
Listen, I want to just say real quickly, there's a few people online. They may be actually if you're on the phone and listening on your computer or a device at the same time, it's going to be a little difficult to kind of interact. There's folks that are actually listening online as opposed to, and as well as have their phone at the same time. You probably have to choose one device. If you're actually on the internet listening, you will not be able to comment. So I'm listening to it, and that's kind of what's happening right now. We got some folks that are listening by phone as well as their devices.
Right, so you're getting a little bit of a feedback loop for between the two devices.
Exactly, that's what's happening.
Right, so as Bishop was saying, you know, just as a housekeeping note, if you know that you're going to comment, and we want you to come in and comment, just please just go ahead and call, dial in on the phone, and then discontinue the online portion of it. And once you finish your comment, if you want to just go totally hands free, go back to the online version, then just hang up the phone and go back to the online version. Otherwise, there are a few technical issues that will cause kind of a noise loop in the line. So thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of like. You know, when you call into the radio, so you say, please turn your radio down.
Yeah, right.
It's the same thing. You know, it's exactly
the same
thing.
There you go. That's right. Okay. So as we were saying, going on, for those who were not able to hear what Grandmaster Hayes was saying, President of KBK Kai, was saying that a lot of the comments in the centered around liability. And the concern about qualified instructors and that sort of thing, and which all gets to accountability. This leads to a question, you know, because martial arts instructors in the KBK system, that is, you know, Kumashi Kai Karate Kempo system, and I would say probably all of the martial arts systems and instructors that I've met and know over the years do not use corporal punishment, like hitting a student to discipline them or to correct the student's behavior. And, you know, that's also part of teaching, is having creative ways to motivate students to do things. And I don't know that, if there are some isolated cases, those would probably not be among the mainstream that would try to use, you know, any kind of punishment or, you know, inflicting some kind of, you know, pain on a student in order to correct them if they're doing something out of place, or if they're, you know, or in order to get them to get them into a disciplined posture. So the question becomes, is it just perception that where people are concerned about, you know, about their children getting hurt, aside from the possibility, the fact it's a sport, you know? Is it just because, well, when you talk about karate, kung fu, judo, you know, other martial arts, that it inherently it has, there is an ability that a person gains to inflict pain or damage on another individual. But that is not necessarily, as we know, and it's not, that isn't the point of it, and it's definitely not the point of instruction where there are so many aspects like competition and so forth. Is it just public perception? Is it just that fear of, because when you mention martial arts or karate, that causes people to say, "Whoa, there may be there's a higher degree of issues that could come from it as far as injuries and so forth than soccer, football, baseball, etc."
I don't think there's a certain level of fear. I think, from my experience, dealing with parents, I don't hear that the parents asking that question, what if my child gets hurt? They, majority of the ones, just like football, they don't ask, what if my child gets hurt? You know, it's a contact sport. They watch it on television. They have some type of experience and, you know, wisdom when it comes to bringing a child somewhere. They do their homework and they already have some type of experience with it. So, but there is that percent that it can happen.
Yeah.
And there's that percent of parents that may ask that question, or it's on the back of their mind, should I ask it? Should I wait to see if it happens to mine or anybody else's? But that's
right,
where it
right.
comes in. The majority of schools are prepared. They have insurance.
Mm-hmm.
They know what hospitals. They have a waiver to fill, to sign up for certain things. They
yeah.
have the if they go and train somewhere else, they have permission slips to go here and go there. So there's all kind of things prepared in advance
right.
when they sign up. But,
so when you take that out of the parents' hands, there
are some more legal things that's beyond
uh-huh.
the. There's more legal things that is beyond the instructor's knowledge. That's why they have lawyers and
mm-hmm.
people that with that experience. So you have to learn just like you have an accountant. You have a lawyer just in case.
Well, let me ask you this. So I mean, when we take this away from where the parents are concerned with it, and agree that where most parents are pretty well knowledgeable about that, and they make a conscious decision based on that. But when we talk about educators and administrators in school systems, when they think about it, do they think more from the liability end, more from the, well, I'm not sure what will happen if we bring this into school then from a legal point of view. Is there a difference and based on their perceptions or concerns than there would be for just the parent who makes those decisions every day on an individual basis? When you start talking about people who decide on these programs in a school system,
well, from my understanding, if they are interested in a program like that, they are already protected from certain things and certain issues, and they'll make sure that when they bring any event or sporting activity into their school that they are well prepared for before they get here, before they allow to be a part of their organization.
Right. Which also becomes whether or not they do include that curriculum if they feel like they're prepared enough, as you say, then they may bring those programs in. And if they feel like it may be too much, there may be too much liability or too many risks, then they might not, right?
Well, listen, from my experience
uh-huh.
too, teaching in the school system,
mm-hmm.
we never have an incident. You might have a child break a nail or get punched, get the wind knocked out of them, but we teach them how to deal with that. We teach
right.
them when they fall and hurt the elbow or slip doing a kata or training. Technique, you know, we teach them about pain, we teach them about energy, we teach them, we prepare them for martial arts from the beginning, from the white belt level on up through each rank. So they know, and the parents sit there most of the time and they watch. So
mm-hmm.
with my experience from teaching here in all the different schools here, we never had a problem, never, not
mm-hmm.
one that I can remember. So, and that's why a lot of those principals allowed martial arts into their program.
Right.
Because, you know, and then, you know, we also had a professional school for them to go to
mm-hmm.
if they wanted to train more. So,
basically, is there a period, but when you first institute the program, is there a period of indoctrination or orientation for the educators to and principals, educators, administrators, people like that, to be able to take some time
yes,
to understand
is.
Those things
we,
that you mentioned?
Yes, there is, because we asked one, I think it was some years ago, we asked some of the principals and some of the, it was a couple of nuns and some of the priests, and they were, you know, they gave us, we sat down and we talked to them, and we let them know how the program was ran. We gave them all the information. We did demonstrations to enter into the school so they can see what they was going to get, you know, and they saw the kids, the children, you know, some of the kids, if they didn't have school or they
mm-hmm.
got permission to go to the demonstration during school, they could miss that hour or two to go do a demonstration at another school. And
right.
those students, those children and teachers and principals would see the demonstration during gym or during lunch period or during some type of in the auditorium during that period. You know, so they got to see the program. They got to see other children doing what they wanted their children to do.
So basically it appears that because of that period of orientation that was afforded them, them being able to get a good idea of what's involved, how it's administrated, how it's applied.
Exactly.
You didn't have those kind of concerns, questions, and fears that you might have had otherwise.
We had the questions. We had the fears.
Mm-hmm.
If they felt that there was a question and they felt that there was a need to get to understand a certain type of fear that something may happen, if they, you know, but for the most part, they understood. They know a child can get hurt. They can kick that hit doing soccer. They can hit their legs together and get injured. They know baseball.
Sure.
The ball can hit one of the kids on the shoulder and the head, or they can run into each other. Basketball, they can slip and fall or elbow. You know, all sporting activities have some degree that there may be an injury.
Right, right.
Someone
I
may get hurt. Mm-hmm. So. No, they don't.
Yeah.
They, you know, all the schools that we taught at, it was well controlled. The children understood that we didn't play. They understood discipline because this is a discipline that they're learning, and with that, they had to have self discipline and self control.
Right.
Any self that you could think of, they had to have self. They had to think about self.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if I do this myself, I am going to get myself in trouble. And there's a consequence. They understood about consequences. So we didn't have children running around hitting each other or when the sensei's turned their backs. You may have a little of that in the beginning.
Sure.
Because the children are not understanding. They're testing their instructor to see how far they can go. They do that with their teachers.
Of course.
But after
that,
then they understand, this is what happened to him. I'm not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when the children get on automatic, you know, they have big brothers and big sisters within the school. They have yellow belts, orange belts, different ranks. So a white belt will see a green or a purple belt student that was at that school. They say, hey, he doesn't act like that, so I'm going to act like him. I know better.
Right. And I'm what I'm hearing from what you're saying is that if – as far as these concerns would be voiced by any organization, the parents too, but we're basically talking about school systems
and
schools.
Right.
Yeah, but is that if they're given a good opportunity to be given information up front, to be demonstrated up front before you get in that setting, if they're able to be given having their questions answered, any concerns put to rest, that they are very open to it.
Yeah, they are open to it.
Yeah. And as always, just like we talked, just like what you talk about. One of the reasons I bring that up is because I've been involved in some conversations where people tend to think that when you talk about baseball, football, basketball, soccer, they inherently seem to think, and some people I've spoken to seem to think that there is a huge difference between that and bringing, say, a karate class into a school or a judo class into a school. They'll even include wrestling, football, baseball, and soccer, but then put judo on the outside with karate and karate, kung fu, judo, what have you, and they look at it, they think it's two separate, complete worlds. And of course, it gets back to some public perception based on media and entertainment. But I think one of the key things that is a good, great takeaway for anyone who is looking at instituting or proposing is just what you said. You have to build some kind of a pre-program to orient to afford for orientation for those people who will be making those decisions, so that they can be. So they can know exactly what's involved, and if you put that there, then I think that you're going to have a higher comfort level and more success with getting those programs in. Any further thoughts from anybody on your panel on?
Yeah, this is Matt Alex.
Chris, good to see you. Good to hear from you today.
Yeah, same here. I just wanted to just, you know, chime in and just mention about, you know, how successful the show has been thus far. And I know we've extended the show in terms of, you know, every few weeks. But this has been a paramount discussion and a paramount issue to discuss. And I'm just glad that we've gotten the feedback. Kind of lets us know what's out there in the educational system and in the educational world, and that, you know, it's a bona fide subject matter to discuss, you know, and you know, whether it happens or when or if not, you know, it's still a viable subject as it relates to martial arts as a whole.
Right.
But I wanted to make mention of that you know, it's, you know, with the show and all, and then with the topic of discussion, it's very prevalent. You know, it is needed, you know, because of what's out here in the world and out here in education and how it discourages children to even want to go to school. If you look at bullying, if you look at, you know, just the dysfunction that exists, and they don't know how to capitalize on it and straighten it out. You know, martial arts is definitely a way.
Well, wonderful, wonderful comments and thoughts, and we're about to go into a break now, and then we will be back and continue this discussion. Please stay with us, Master Alexander, Grandmaster Haywood, the rest of our guests. Please stay with us, and you, our listeners, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Responsible and love your family. I'll bet you have an emergency contact number readily available. And hats off to you, because you should. But do you have an emergency plan that you've discussed and practiced with your household? Does each member of your family know what to do and where to go in case of a fire, natural disaster, or other emergency? Does everyone know how to use a fire extinguisher and understand basic escape techniques? If not, then get busy. This small investment of time and effort can pay off in ways far too great to measure. If you need some assistance, that's okay. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, has a family emergency planning sheet for free download. You can link to it and print it out from the KBKKIA.com's website. Also, take a moment and go to ready.gov/make-a-plan. The site is filled with ideas that will literally get you going if the need arises.
There are many important numbers in our lives. A birth date, the address where a cherished family event will happen. Winning lotto numbers would be great to have. But there is one number that we should all have at our fingertips. That number is 800-222-1222. Because that is the number to the Poison Center anywhere in the United States. 800-222-1222 will get you immediate assistance for exactly what to do in the event that someone is poisoned. Children 6 and under are, of course, at risk, so we keep those cleaning chemicals locked out of reach. But did you know that twice the number of children are poisoned each year by cosmetic and personal care items? There's a substantial number of accidental poisonings among teenagers due to sometimes well-meaning prescription drug sharing. That's why everyone, especially everyone with a phone, should have 800-222-1222 saved and readily available. The next successful rescue could be yours.
Hey, we're back in. And again, we are on here live with the Kubushi Kai Karate International, Karate Association International Radio Show. Thank you, who are listening in to the show. We welcome you back to this segment. Those of you who are new to the program, just tuning in or just calling in, via phone or online. We're talking about martial arts in mainstream education. Today we are focusing on the legal concerns and aspects that some of the educators, administrators, and school systems might have for bringing a program in. And we've been talking about some of the feedback and some of the experiences that we've had in discussing this issue with teachers, with other martial arts instructors, and so forth. Very interesting thoughts have come out so far. One of which is that you'll have fewer concerns if you help to prepare the educators and administrators for what they will really be getting, as opposed to what they may think they're getting when you start saying, okay, let's bring karate in school. Well, on that thought by itself could bring kind of a little nervousness. But then when you start saying, let me show you what martial arts instructions is, what martial art instruction is, no matter where you put it, these are the benefits, and these benefits have been derived in dojos and in school martial arts schools for years, centuries even. Now we can benefit from some of these things in the mainstream school systems alongside with academics. So that's kind of what we've been talking about, just to bring you up to speed. And again, we welcome your comments and questions. Please feel free to call in. We want to hear what you have to say, and we certainly will welcome you to the program. So the other one thing that we're thinking, just coming back into the thoughts on that, is there a difference in legal liability between a martial arts school and a public school per se, when you have a voluntary program? Question on that. Would it have to be purely voluntary, or is there a way that you could say, well, you know, this just like physical education, you're graded in physical education. Would it be a good idea to get grades for participating in a martial arts, in a school based martial arts system course? Anybody on that?
Well, if it's a part of the school curriculum, I think, but for the most part, if it's, you know, a grade to pass, whether it's dealing with passing or failing for the year, if the school sets it up like that, if you come in agreement. But other than that, they get their reward from getting stripes, getting different belt levels.
Right.
But I think on that, if you have an independent school and you're independent from the school system, I think that it depends on how you set it up from the beginning, from the start. I'll say it like that.
Right. And kind of the thought that I'm bringing that in with is that if it were something that you got graded for, just like PE, for example, in PE, they say, okay, we're going to do basketball this month, or we're going to do volleyball this month. If you don't participate, then you won't get a grade. All right, and maybe there may be some way to give students an alternative, but pretty much, and of course, this is a long time ago when I was in school. If you didn't participate in whatever the current activity is, you didn't get a good grade. So if you did that with martial arts, would that be the same as saying, okay, well, listen, you have to do this, even though, you know, you can do it, not do it, but then your grade depends on you participating. Is that something that could work?
Well, I never dealt with it. It may be able to work, but we never dealt with it like that. You know, so mm-hmm. that's out of my – I couldn't speak on that one. All I
sure,
can say
sure.
is most of the ones that I've dealt with, it was extra curriculum for the school, and
well,
for them to have a grade, because all the it was voluntary.
Right.
Most of the kids that signed up, that's something they wanted to do.
Sure.
Mandatory that they participate or they get a failing grade or anything like that. The majority of the kids that was in there, they wanted to be there. You know, sometimes children see something they with their eyes and they want it, but then when they get involved in it, I don't want it anymore. You know, so they can walk away from it. But if a martial arts school have a great curriculum, a good curriculum, you get to retain a lot of those students. They don't leave you.
Right. Well,
it was versus me passing or failing, I would say, do I have a choice to get in there? Because I don't know if I don't like it, I may not pass.
Right. Well, you know, like for example, in physical education programs in school, there are certain periods that they go through certain different activities, and if that were just one of the activities as an introduction to martial arts, as opposed to just saying that, well, this is not going to be the thing you do all year. Now, you could do it in the extracurricular program if you want to. You could do it, but as part of the physical education program, we are going to introduce you to this, and when that time comes, then bring in a good qualified instructor just for that unit, or as those different classes cycle through, you'd have different students for maybe a 4 or 6 week period to introduce them to martial arts, and if they wanted to go further, they could seek out a school, or there might be an extracurricular like after school or something like that that would be set up for students who want to go further with it. And I was wondering what maybe from some of our guests online or some of our callers, what they might think about that, that approach.
We do have a caller on the line. Her name's Nicole.
Great.
Nicole, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hello.
Hi, Nicole. Well, welcome to the broadcast, and we welcome your comments or questions. Go right ahead.
Thank you. I kind of got kind of the gist of what you were saying. I kind of joined a little late, but I do have a child who's in the KBK karate, and I do like that you guys are talking about getting it in the schools. For me, just remembering, you know, when I was in school, I'd like to see it even. I do like the after school idea, you know, having it be a part of like a curriculum, like how they have wrestling or basketball,
right,
and then different schools can compete each other. I really like that idea. And I also, even if it could go further and maybe even be incorporated in like part of the gym class curriculum,
right,
because, you know, gym class, they break it off, you know, you have a week or two and you're doing gymnastics, or they're learning about this, or they even have wrestling or basketball. If they could do that where an instructor or teacher could go in, you know, during their curriculum and it was part of that. And then from there, you know, if the kids were excited or the parents were excited about it, then they could take it further. Oh, we want to get them in the after-school program. Or, hey,
mm-hmm,
where we can go take them to be in this. So mm-hmm, it'd be nice to see those things happen.
Well, I mean, and I'm glad you said that. Stay with us, because I just want to follow up on that, because, as you know, with some of the same programs, that some of the programs that children are exposed to in regular PE periods, they go on to study dance, they go on to study, different things that they're exposed to, and even some of the electives and some of the other activities, like from the even on an academic and from the English class, some students go on to study drama or theater. So yeah, this would be, I think what I'm hearing from you is that you just like many several people I've spoken to would think that this would be a great way to otherwise introduce students who might not even think about whether or not they like karate or whether or not like they like martial arts, to give them a chance to at least experience it and go home, give some feedback to their parents and so forth, and then, you know, maybe go further if they'd like. Is that kind of what your experience would be or your thoughts are?
Yeah, definitely. That was exactly what I was thinking. And I just want to add that I do like, because, you know, I feel like karate doesn't get enough credit as it should be given, because there's so much more. You know, you think, so many people who don't know, they think of karate, oh, okay, they're doing martial arts, they're fighting, but it's so much more than that. I mean, they're teaching you discipline, and, you know, you're going on, it's teaching you respect, you know, and there's so many things that could be incorporated. So
right,
if we could get it into the schools where people can really have that experience, I feel like it could even help grow, you know, karate itself and get the reverence that it's deserved.
Well, I really appreciate your comments on that and all of the thoughts that we're getting in on this. And as I mentioned to you, our listeners, early on and in previous broadcasts, that when these discussions don't just go nowhere. there are people listening. There are people more and more people calling in each week. Sometimes we're getting calls and thoughts between programs on how to get these things started, and I think they're getting some traction. And for people like Nicole, Grandmaster Haywood, Master Derek Alexander, and some of the people who have had some direct experiences, and even last week we had a great guest come in on the line. This is Johanna Brightman. She was a program director with one of the very, very large and long standing community activity programs that have recreational systems, I should say, recreational departments. And she made some really good comments, and they were getting some great comments from people on the need for these programs, not just the desire for it, but the need for our youth and throughout this country from all backgrounds to have a better outlet for their energies, a better some better guidance as far as discipline and so forth is concerned, and respect for each other, for themselves, and things like that. And so this program, I just wanted people to know that we are pushing forward with gathering these messages and thoughts, and we want to make sure that everyone, you tell people about the program, tell people definitely call in, because this information that we get from you and the thoughts and the comments that you put in are helping to further part of KBK Kai's mission of making this kind of training, making this kind of discipline, and making the benefits of martial arts, not just the ability to fight, but the benefits of the holistic benefits of martial arts available to everyone who wants it, whether they have a lot of money, whether they don't, whether they live in a very rural area, or whether they live in an urban area, to make those things available. So I want to thank our guests for that part of it. And we're going to move on with just some more thoughts on this. And as we mentioned, we're talking about the legal aspects of moving these private programs into the school system. When you talk about the legal aspect of something, the first thing that people, of course, and reasonably so, think is, what if we get sued? What if we get sued because one of the kids learned something in a class and they applied it to a kid outside of the class, even, or another student? What would be the answer to that person when they say, well, what if? And of course, we want to bring some legal experts in on the program, and to answer some of those questions, because we are also going to have a future program just dealing with the legal aspects of teaching martial arts. But as for today, well, I just want go ahead.
Well, from my experience, again, we only teach certain children at certain ages certain techniques. We don't teach them pressure points. We don't teach them how to break bones. We give them a curriculum that teaches them how to punch correctly, how to kick correctly, how to move, how to concentrate. We teach them about speed, power, and focus, how to focus. So we're not giving them 100% of self-defense and things on that nature. We give them only what we feel at that age that they need to know. And from teaching and for teaching for years, most instructors know what to teach and what not to teach the children. So they won't go out there and try to put an arm lock or a wrist lock or a finger break on some kid, or a choke or something like that. We don't teach chokes, even though we know how to teach chokes. We know how to teach bone breaking techniques. We don't teach that to children, especially in the school system. And then we also teach them discipline, and we tell them what not to do and what the consequences if you get caught even trying to do these things. You know, there are some consequences. Yeah. Mentally, we tell them what they – hello?
Oh, go right ahead. Go ahead. Hello? You're still on. Yes, you're still on.
Mentally, we give them tools to use and give them reasons why not to use certain techniques. And then them being taught certain techniques, they know how those techniques feel. And they know how to gauge those techniques. They say, oh, if I do this, this is how that feels on that person. So they know, hey, look, I can't do that to him. I don't care how angry I get, but then there's their self-control again. We teach them self-controls.
So basically, when you start talking about the legal aspect of things, you talk about are you covered, what your exposure is.
From an instructor's perspective, now when it gets down to the law, that's something different. And as an instructor, there's certain things about law that you should know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this is what I wanted to bring out about that and go further into. If from that legal point of view, when you start talking about, you know, what could possibly happen, you talk about exposure, that is to the legal risk of it. If you know, as long as you know, and it's well known that this is the way you're teaching, that this is what's included in the curriculum, that these are things that could cause a problem or things that are detrimental are not taught and they're advised against and taught against, and the guidance is provided to the student. If a student goes out and does those things, which you can't control everything everybody does, but if a student goes out and does those things and it's well known that the instructors, they didn't get that from the instructors, they didn't get that from the karate program, then they're pretty much covered, correct? Wouldn't you say?
It covers in a sense, if I may interject. In that sense, you know, it becomes a reliability on the student, you know, that he has learned the way of karate do, the way of karate. And you know that deals with discipline, it deals with self-restraint and all those aspects that one learned from a mental standpoint when you study and learn martial arts. And it's handed down to whether it be your instructor or your association that you're a part of. And when it comes to the legal aspect, you know, if it's going to be infused in the school educational program or as an educational program, then, you know, the school will do the background check on the instructor or the community program will do the background checks, the necessary checks and balances, and then they will see that particular instructor who's coming in to teach has a positive background from that standpoint, has not been involved with any type of situations that could lead to some legal discourse. So, you know, that one aspect coming in, and there are other aspects that are looked at and examined before a program gets started. And you know, as Grandmaster Haywood said, when kids interact with one another, you know, the instructor manages that as well. And, you know, the instructor is going to teach a certain way and teach certain lessons and instructing the kids a proper way. You know, they may not get into attacking the meridians of the body in terms of pressure point tactics, you know, not at that point. But, you know, if it was infused in the school system, then there would be a level of and a gradual learning possibility there, because you may have a certain grade, like in elementary schools, they may learn certain things from a martial arts perspective. And then, you know, just like in a school, a martial arts school, you know, you have teeny tots that you teach from a certain standpoint, certain ways. And as they become, you know, more in tune and as they promote it, then they learn the proper instruction. They learn a little bit more in detail and they advance from that perspective. So the only thing left is for the child to grow up into their bodies. And you know, that's why some disciplines wait for a child to get to the teenage years or possibly beyond before they promote the black belt, because there's certain things that they want to encourage them to do in terms of breaking. And, you know, kids won't able to break with their fragile body, you know, they're still developing. But all those things come into play. And from a legal standpoint, those things have to be looked at, examined, and then decided on whether it's going to be inclusive at such and such a point of time or at a given
right.
point of time, if it's, you know, the age group, or if it's infused in the schools.
All right. So to package that, so the idea, and I think the idea that we're talking about is packaging that in a way that it's understandable to those people who have to make the decisions to bring these programs into school systems and to their legal departments and so forth to have it put together in a way where you can present that and make sure that it's easy to understand. So that they can make those decisions without that fear of exposure and so forth. Would you agree with that?
By all means.
Then, and we are actually as we are growing, we're about 5 minutes out in the program, and I was and if there are any other calls in online, we welcome you to come in for a final comment. And for those of you our guests, as we said, we're going to go to a quick break, and then we're going to come in and wrap it up. So thanks for joining, and then we will be back to wrap up the show.
You're responsible and love your family. I'll bet you have an emergency contact number readily available. And hats off to you, because you should. But do you have an emergency plan that you've discussed and practiced with your household? Does each member of your family know what to do and where to go in case of a fire, natural disaster, or other emergency? Does everyone know how to use a fire extinguisher and understand basic escape techniques? If not, then get busy. This small investment of time and effort can pay off in ways far too great to measure. If you need some assistance, that's okay. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, has a family emergency planning sheet for free download. You can link to it and print it out from the KBKKIA.com's website. Also, take a moment and go to ready.gov/makeaplan. The site is filled with ideas that will literally get you going if the need arises.
So we're back in, and as I mentioned, we were going to go make sure we go to the phone lines and see if we had the other guests come ready to come in, and we do. We have Mr. Dreef on the line, and he's, I understand, a parent, and has some thoughts that he wanted to come in with, questions or thought or comments. Dreef, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. I had a question.
Hey,
how's it going? What's the best age to start your child off in karate?
When you say repeat the question for you, you were asking when is the best age to start a kid in karate, correct?
Yeah.
Make sure.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I'm gonna say from my own background with students and training, I'm gonna say that you can start them as early as 3 years old, because I have. And I'm going to let some of our other experienced guests chime in on that as well, because there are certain things you can teach, just like I don't know if you were in the show, but Grandmaster Haywood mentioned a few minutes ago, it's not how young they are, it's what you can teach them at a certain age, because there are certain things you can start children off with at a young age. You can start them off with understanding stances. You can start them off with, you know, a basic horse stance and punch. They almost very, very young, they can start with those things. And you can also start dealing with them on concentration and discipline at a young age. Grandmaster Haywood, I'm going to pass that one over to you.
Well, I think so also. I usually say 3, maybe 4. It depends on the maturity of the child. We have some very mature 3-year-olds for that age group, and we have some very mature 4-year-olds, and we also have babies that are still, that's 3 or 4, that's still babies. They haven't matured yet. So you'll know when you bring your child, when you bring the child there, and that child you know, because sometimes the parents want their child to just start, hey, he's 3 years old, he's ready, I've been waiting on it, I want him to get in there, but the child hasn't matured at 3 years old enough to study martial arts. So you let him, you just get him in there and start giving him a little bit at a time. You know, you have a curriculum for that age group also. You just don't start teaching them certain techniques. You just get them ready, get them active, get them energetic, and get them to loving what they're doing and get them interested in what they're doing. And then you'll be able to gauge that child. You say, hey, look, he's not ready this year. Bring him back when he's 4 years old. You know, or either if he's four, bring him back when he's five. He may be ready then. You know,
yeah.
But sometimes some of these children come in at 3 years old, and man, the parents have already groomed them into a certain maturity level where they can sit there and their attention span is mature enough to sit there in their karate class.
Well,
okay.
I want to add another part to that as well, is that you as a parent, and just like speaking to all of our parents online, but also you as a parent, there's certain things you can see in your child at home that, like, for example, certain things that if they could start following, I'll say, semi-complex tasks. In other words, if you could tell them to go do three things, and they can do all three of them. You say, go upstairs, bring this toy to your room, come back downstairs, and get a glass of water. They can do those things, right? You're kind of getting to the point where they can follow those kind of instructions and focus a little bit. And we're just about out of time, but Dreef, I hope you'll call back in. Our live show is going to be every second and fourth Sunday. And to the rest of our viewers, great question, and please call back in and let us know what you found, and if you found a good class, if you need some help with that, we'll be glad to help you offline or get with you offline on that. And
okay.
All right, and thanks for calling in.
Yep.
Here we are. We're getting ready to wrap today's show up. We've had a good dialogue today, and we are going to come back in 2 weeks with our live show, but we'll be replaying this show, and you can just go to the link on the kbkkia.com site, and you can do it. You can hear a replay of this and earlier broadcast. The call-in number as for our broadcast is 347-989-1016 every second Sunday of the month, second and fourth Sunday of the month. And we want to say, Bish.
See, I just want to express my gratitude, because I'm sitting here listening to this, like, combined, what, y'all have a couple hundred years worth of knowledge between you? It will be great. Like, I mean, if things can keep going where they're going, I mean, keep passing those nuggets out. I mean, I have personal experience from training with some of you guys and having y'all as mentors, along with my own instructor, Bud Harrison, or Master Harrison. So, I mean, I just want to say thank you, and hello to all my brothers and sisters. Ush, y'all stay strong.
Ush.